You tired of stuff like that? Live in a world, it's hard, isn't it? And boy, if we could just get the little bit of pirate in us and find the axe. And in fact, our pirates are here today. And they have brought their booty. We were sitting around this week, you know, we came up with this idea and having our pirates come out and bring their treasure. And thinking about the theme for this next few weeks, you know, where we're going to be talking about our treasures. And our creative team really wanted us to come up with some kind of title that had booty in it. Most of them that they threw out, I couldn't say up here without repenting later. I probably going to have to repent of the one that at least stuck in my mind. My favorite one is, how big is your booty? But, you know, we'll move away from booty jokes and back to just good old pirate, X marks the spot. Our treasures, where we place our highest value, our pursuits, that sort of thing is where Jesus is going to take us. And so they brought us a treasure out, and let's see what kind of stuff it has on the inside of our good treasure box. Hope this won't fall off of there. There's a cell phone in here. How many of you value this highly? If you were without your cell phone, I left mine home yesterday. We went to a movie and I left mine home. My wife cheered. She said, I'm tired of you looking on the internet and checking your phone and texting while you're driving. To which my son looked at her and said, yeah, but mom, you do your makeup while you're driving, so I don't see why that's so bad. But we treasure our cell phones. I got some bling. How about that for a diamond? Boy, if that was only real, right? This is my daughter's. It's in her room, and I guess it's part of the dream. I don't know. But some of us just value, maybe you value the idea of having a big old fat Wilma Flintstone one on your finger, or, you know, if you're a ghetto gangster, something like this that you wear around your neck with big old gold stuff and like a money dollar sign or something like that. I don't know. We value that. We value family. Got a picture of my family, and I was reminded, be careful about making booty jokes while you're holding this up. But we value family and the importance of those right around us. They can be a treasure. Got a car. Don't you wish it looked like that? You know, if we could get ourselves a little race car looking thing. This is one of my son's toys. But, you know, you don't ever see Hot Wheels makers making 1984 Ford Escorts for kids to have. It just, you know, doesn't happen. But we value our cars, even if they are junkers. Our video games, Game Boy. Now, I will tell you, one of the funniest stories of my life related to this. My children like these games. They're playing with them all the time. Have all kinds of games for them. And my mom and dad have this struggle that they get confused, and they get something in their head, and they can't remember what the name of something is, and so they just keep calling it what is in their brain, even though it's wrong. For example, we never go to the Olive Garden. We go to the Italian Gardens, okay? My mom walked in. I'm not making this up. My mom walked in one day, and she said, I bought Andy a new Playboy game. She got PlayStation and Game Boy mixed, if you're not catching that. So you're like, well, wow. Thanks, Grandma. But you know, some of us, our life revolves around the value of a video game or a computer or something like that. It just becomes really a deep issue of who we are. How about this? Do we value athletics and sports? And even more so, by the way, this obviously is one of my challenges. Not soccer. It's not a real sport. But some of you are like, oh, that's wrong. Anyway, get over it. We're a baseball crowd. You know, honestly, we value sports. But here's where I see it even worse. And this is a really good way for me to avoid my own idols and make fun of yours. Not so much, really. Where I really see this coming up is the fact that as we talk about our treasures this morning, what we deeply value, we can value something like this to the point where we begin to teach our children that this is more important than being church on Sunday morning. And it really kind of does show where our hearts are. Now, I'm not saying that if you ever had a game at 10 o'clock on Sunday, you should never go. But I do see a trend in the American church that we hit summer and late spring and summer soccer and baseball season, and a third of our crowd is always out at a ball game. Now, my point is this. What is that teaching us about what we really value? And by the way, as I say I'm teasing you about yours, I am guilty, okay? I'm guilty before you of this stuff. But we value our soccer balls. How about our houses? Do we value this? Do we invest all our time, talents, treasures into the building of our own home, our own kingdom, our own well-being, our own comfort? When we get a new job, do we always run to try to find a bigger house or spend more money on it and that kind of stuff? And I got a couple other things. I don't want to miss anything in here. I got mine last because I picked on some of you and some of you. So I got my Gone Hunting deal. That's not fair that got stuck in here, by the way. It's just not right. Our leisure, our recreation, our pleasure, our enjoyment. When we think about our treasures and we think about the things that we value and the things that we pursue the most, where are X's? You know, if X marked the spot, if we're going to say, listen, how do we find what you value? How do we find what's important to you? And X marked the spot. Where would we find that X? We do live in hard times. We live in a period of life that's being compared to the 1930s. Just got a Time magazine that was dealing with the comparisons of now and Barack Obama and FDR and the Great Depression. And, you know, the magazine acknowledged we're not there yet, but there are a lot of similarities. A lot of people out of work. Unemployment keeps climbing. A lot of you have felt the impact of that. Our portfolios are down massively. For us, we have a kid going to college next year, and that fund that was there is worth half what it was 2 years ago. We all somewhere interact with this. And what happens, we're preaching right through this section of the Bible called the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is teaching his disciples. He's gathered a few people close to him who have said, all right, I'm abandoning it all. I'm living for you. I'm going to be a follower of Jesus. They have bought into the plan. They have embraced Jesus as their king. This is not a teaching that's to the masses, to the crowds. This is a teaching to those who have said, I'm in. I'm going for it. And as we say that, let me just acknowledge not everybody here is there yet. Not everybody here has decided that Jesus is the center of their life, that they're going to pursue and live for him. And I just want to tell you that as Jesus lays these things out, it's worth it. Even if it costs us everything here, it's worth it. Jesus is a great king. He is a benevolent, loving father. And we can trust him even when we deal with brokenness. And what's going to happen in this kind of little series within a series, our big series is called Red Letters. We're calling it Red Letters because these are Jesus words, Jesus teachings. In a lot of Bibles, you open it, the words are in red. But within that, we're going to do a little mini series called X Marks the Spot, because what's going to happen is that Jesus is going to speak to us about what we value, what we treasure. In fact, he uses the word treasures. And he's going to talk to us about the things that we hold in high esteem and we pursue and where we place those things. And this week, we're really going to address the issue of our treasures. You know, what is it that we value most? Next week, we're going to look at, actually, Weston's going to be preaching next week, and he's going to be talking to you about trust, about the fact that as Jesus talks, he realizes that there's going to be times in our life where we have great anxiety over surviving in this world. My guess is many of you are going through that right now. What does it look like to trust Jesus in those times? And then the last couple weeks as we do this here in July, there's one verse at the end where Jesus says, seek first the kingdom of heaven and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. We're going to spend 2 weeks talking about that one verse, because I think that one verse is really the key to the entire Sermon on the Mount. What it means to seek first God's kingdom, God's righteousness in our lives, and how that is just a revolutionary, transforming idea. But this morning, we're specifically going to talk about our treasures and about the idea that X marks the spot, and where does our X end up? Where is our treasure? Where does our booty lie, right? Where do we end up here? And I just want to read you some statistics just to get you thinking. First of all, this stat kind of amazes me. It says American Christians control 70% of the world's Christian wealth. We think about Christianity being spread all over the world and the gospel and missions and all that kind of stuff. And the American church, Christians in America, control 70% of the wealth that is in Christianity, that Christians have. Here's another thought. This kind of runs the other way, but they did a study of lottery winners. People had won millions of dollars, and they studied them. They went and interviewed them and talked to them 6 months after they had won the lottery, and they were just trying to gauge, you know, did this make you happy? How did this work? And this is what I found. In this study of lottery winners, after 6 months, they were no happier and satisfied with life than people who had been paralyzed in a car wreck. See, our mindset is if I could just win the lottery, I'd be okay. If I could just have a little bit more, it would work. Our mindset is kind of like Nelson Rockefeller, who at the time was the richest man in America, was asked how much money is enough, and his answer was $1 more. We think if I could just have a better car, better house, but if I just had more money, I could do more with it. And they did the study, and man, they found out that you would be happier if you went home, and on the way home, you had a head-on collision, and you were paralyzed from the neck down, than if you went and bought a lottery ticket and won. Wow, that's amazing. Another statistic, this is more about Jesus and his teaching. Jesus talks more about money and possessions than anything except the kingdom of God. Jesus talks more about our money and our possessions than heaven and hell. Those are pretty big subjects. In fact, 11 of his 30 parables, 11 of 30 stories that Jesus tells somehow relates to our money, our possessions, what we have. And some have estimated that one out of every 6 recorded words out of the mouth of Jesus deals with our stuff. And the question is, why? And here's what happens as you especially study the words of Jesus, but especially as you really interact with all of the New Testament, all the Bibles that relates to our stuff, our treasures. There is a high, high, high correlation between where our treasure is, where our heart is. This is going to come up in the passage this morning. Where our treasure lies, our heart's going to follow. Just bottom line. Jesus is very clear about that. And so he's going to talk to us about our treasure, because if our treasure isn't in the right place today, our heart won't be in the right place tomorrow. Our heart's going to follow our treasure. And if we're going to be people who treasure and value Jesus and the glory of God most on this planet, if we're going to be people who live for something that is greater than just here and now, we're going to have to be people who figure out what it looks like to treasure the right stuff and place our treasure in the right place. Our X has to be in the right spot. Does that make sense? And so if you have a Bible, turn over to the book of Matthew, chapter 6. We're going to be reading verses 19 through 24. If you don't have a Bible, on the end of your rows, we have Bibles for you. If you're on the end, just go ahead and pass them down so everybody has a Bible. You can read along with us. We'll be on page 691 in those Bibles as we talk about X marks the spot, where our treasure lies and how that looks, and what difference that makes in us. And we'll just read the entire passage, and then we'll kind of come back and unpack it for you, okay? Chapter 6, page 691 in those Bibles. And I'll begin with verse 19, and remember, these are the words of Jesus. He is teaching his disciples, but he's teaching through them and talking to us today, even in this time of hardship. All right, here it is. Verse 19, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, where thieves do not break in and steal, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters. He will either hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Jesus, once again, he's talking to us in the opening declaration. He gives two imperatives. Don't store up treasures on earth. Do store up treasures on heaven. He says, listen, here's the deal. There are two places where you can place your X. You can either place your X, you can store your treasure in heaven, or you can store it on earth. And he says, do not store up your treasures on earth. And the reason, what's the reason? Because moth and rust destroy, and thieves will break in and steal it. I love the visual image of steel, because in ancient cultures, houses were built out of mud, and the Greek word here, the original language word for steel, is someone who burrows a hole. Literally, they would, you know, they didn't go through your windows. They just dug a hole in the side of your house, so it destroyed your home as they took your stuff. And he says, this is what happens when you have stuff. If your treasure is here, there's two options. Either your treasure will leave you, or you will leave your treasure. There's the options. If all your treasure is here, if you live for housing, if you live for this booty, if you live for this treasure, if you live for this stuff, at some point in time, either it's going to leave you, you're going to leave it. You cannot take it with you. And even if it endures till the end, you cannot have at the end of life what you lived for. Or it will corrode, it will be destroyed, it will fall apart, it will not be as good as the person next door's. How many of you, do you remember at some point in time buying that really cool new car? You know, we've bought one new car in our life, that my Red Durango that I'm still driving, and I rolled over, it's got over 100,000 miles on it. It does not feel as exciting now to drive as it did when we drove it off the lot. It's corroded, it's rusting. We found out last week, I'm driving around, and there's some weird air conditioner thing where it's leaking on the passenger side, so you need to wear waders if you're riding with me, because I'm not turning off the air. So you'll have to suck it up and deal with it, okay? It falls apart. This is the nature of our universe. And Jesus says, don't store up treasures here. Listen, Jesus is not saying don't store up treasures on earth because it's the wrong thing. Jesus is saying, don't store up your treasures on earth because it's the stupid thing. It will not endure, and even if it does, you won't endure. It's either going to leave you, you're going to leave it. And so the core of what Jesus is going here is this. This is the big picture. Here it is. Jesus is trying to teach us that you become what you treasure, and you pass on what you treasure. Wherever your ex is, that is going to be what you become, and it's going to become what you pass on. Your life will be shaped by the things that you treasure. If you treasure houses and cars and video games and jewelry and those sort of things, your life is going to be massively shaped by what it is you exalt. But not only that, and this is what even scares me more, I realize every day looking into my children that they are me. That my idols and the things that I treasure, I have massively passed on to them. And they tend to treasure the same things. And so if my treasure is here, I will be shaped by my treasure, but not only that, I'm gonna pass it on. Families who are shaped by leisure, and they are that's kind of the center of who they are, and they will ditch everything, including God, for their leisure all the time, will end up with kids who say, God's not a big deal. My comfort and leisure is more important. Families and dads especially who pursue passionately with everything, their treasure is their job and making money, are going to end up with materialistic kids who feel like it is their right and privilege to have the best clothes and the best stuff when they go walk around their high school. Moms who treasure family over everything will create little gods out of their children, and their children will be spoiled because they think the world revolves around them. We become what we treasure, we pass on what we treasure. And Jesus is just trying to teach us that if we're gonna be people who live in the kingdom, we gotta figure out how to put our ex in the right spot. And so what he does is he unpacks this. He really points out here that there are three areas of life that always follow our treasure. There's three areas of life that Jesus can point out always follows our treasure. See, what we want to say is let's get our heart right, our treasure will follow. Jesus says, nope, get your treasure right, your heart will follow. Let's look at it. Three things. First of all, he says your heart will follow. Verses 19 through 21. Look at this. Chapter 6, Verse 19, he says, do not lay up for yourselves. The word do not, and in the next verse, lay up treasures for yourself, are imperatives. They're commands. Jesus is not messing around saying, oh, if you want to, you might try this. He's saying, listen, here's a command. Do it. Do not lay up treasures for yourself on earth. And we already explained why. Moth and rust destroy, thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. Here's the deal, man. It's basically, these two verses are exactly the same in the original language except for the places where the negative word is placed, the word not. It's a parallel. And he's saying, you have two options. You can X the moth. You can put your X here. You can put your X in the eternal. My command to you, Jesus is saying, is don't lay up treasures here. Lay up treasures in heaven. For there's a reason. Verse 21, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Jesus is telling us our heart will follow our treasure. There's no way to keep this from happening. We have this tendency to say, if God would just give me a little more money, or if I could just have a little more stuff, I would do the right things with it. If I was just a little more wealthy, I would give more to missions. If I just had a little more time, I would devote that to reading scripture and praying. If I just had a bigger iPod, I would not have quite so many Jonas Brothers songs on it and High School Musical songs, and I would put a few more songs that sing about Jesus. But my iPod isn't big enough for that. My checkbook isn't big enough for that. And what Jesus is saying is, listen, that mindset, all you are going to do is you're going to realize that if God makes you richer, you're going to see it as a way to increase your standard of living. And what Jesus is always going to say to us, is if God makes you richer, it is not to increase your standard of living, it's to increase your standard of giving. If God blesses you in certain ways, how you respond to that blessing, what you do with that, your heart is going to follow where you place your treasure. And we live in a place, if you read, theologians and people who just look at culture and God and that sort of stuff, the big sin in America is our materialism. And it is the big sin in the church, the fact that we kind of feel like God has blessed us so that we can just keep growing our stuff and make it better. And Jesus tells this story about this guy that should speak deeply in our hearts. There's this dude, Jesus tells a story. He says there's this guy who is a farmer. He's got a big old barn, big old house. It's all going good for him. But man, he has such good crops that he steps back and goes, man, I am something else. I have all this stuff together and here's what I'm going to do. I am going to tear down my barn and I'm going to build myself as a monument to me, a bigger barn. And he gets it built. And all the neighbors are standing around and go, ooh, Farmer Jones, that's a big old barn. That's bigger than anybody else's barn. He's going, yeah, I know. I'm a good farmer. I got it together. It's all about me. And Jesus, this is what he says. He says, you fool, for tonight, your soul's going to be required of you. Tonight, your soul's going to be required of you. And somebody else is going to get it. And this is what we look like. We build these monuments to me. We feel like if God blesses us, let's just keep expanding. I'll flip a few more dollars God's way, or I'll do something. And Jesus said, no, where your treasure is, your heart's going to follow. And a lot of times I'll hear people say, man, I just wish I had a heart for the poor. Jesus says, where your treasure is, your heart's going to follow. I just wish I had a heart for people hearing about Jesus. Jesus says, where your treasure is, your heart's going to follow. I just wish I had a heart for missions, for the gospel going to crazy places and people who've never heard about Jesus. Jesus says, where your treasure is, your heart's going to follow. The path to heart transformation is for us to see the greatness of God and begin to live for something other than this measly, worn out, broken world. But oh, it's hard, isn't it? I mean, it's easy for me to stand up here and tell you this stuff. But I have houses and cars and kids and family and all this stuff that's okay. I mean, the Bible doesn't say any of this is wrong. It just says don't live for it. And then sometimes it's a really fine line between living in a house and living for a house, driving in a car and living for the car, enjoying the Cardinals and living for the Cardinals. You see what I'm saying? I mean, you know the tension I'm sharing. We live there. And Jesus is telling his followers, listen, if you want heart transformation, you've got to rethink treasure. Because where your heart is, where your treasure is, your heart's going to follow. So the first thing he tells us is if we want this to work, if we want to understand the treasure issue here, we've got to start putting our treasure in the right place and living for what's eternal, because our heart's going to follow. Second thing he says, that our mind is going to follow. Your mind's going to follow. Verses 22 and 23, read this with me. It says, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, the whole body will be full of light. But if the eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? He's warning us that if we're not careful, we'll have spiritual glaucoma. We'll have a filter over our eyes that turns our eyes hazy and eventually dark, and it's going to turn our soul dark, but we're not even going to know it. We're going to be living in darkness. We're going to be people walking around in this really dark place, and we just keep bumping into each other and things, but we think we see great, and we don't realize that the darkness in our eyes has led to a darkness in our hearts and our minds and our intellects and who we are and the way we think. And when light comes along, we not even don't see it. We run from it. And he says, if your treasure's not in the right place, this is connected. He says, if your eye is dark, if it's not single, if it's not healthy, and your focus, your direction, what you were looking towards is always something other than light, eventually you will get so used to the dark that you won't even realize it. There will be a diseasing there, a darkness in your eyes. It's kind of a dangerous verse here, that we can be looking at stuff so much, and you know, we're on this pursuit. There's a little bit of pirate in all of us. We're all searching for our buried treasure. And if our pursuit for what we treasure is looking at things that are just here, what Jesus is trying to say is those things are dark. There's no light in those things. And our eyes will kind of lead us in that direction. And all of a sudden, we don't realize our hearts are getting darker and our minds especially are getting darker and darker and darker. Because, you know, when the Bible really talks about light and darkness, it's dealing with truth and understanding the light and the brightness of God and understanding what Jesus has done for us and the greatness of his glory. And you know, there's a story about Henry Ford had a guy come into his office. He was a young engineer very early in the company. And you know, he was trying to build, you know, the Ford Motor Company around good values and all this kind of stuff. And he had a conversation with this guy. He said, what do you live for? And the guy said, my whole goal in life is to get ridiculously rich, have a great portfolio, retire early, and just, you know, be a rich dude who's powerful and everybody looks up to. And Henry Ford's response was, man, that's sad and kind of lame. And so what he did is Henry Ford actually went home and found an old pair of round rimmed glasses, you know, the metal rimmed glasses, and took a couple of silver dollars and put them inside the rims and came and handed it to the guy and said, put these on. And the guy put them on and he began to look around, and Henry Ford said, what do you see? And he said, I can't see anything because the money's in the way. Is that our life? Are we being blinded to the greatness of God because our stuff's in the way? See, our heart will follow, but not only that, our mind, our ability to see light, our ability to see truth, our ability to see the greatness of God will be blinded if we live for our own greatness and our own treasures. If that's what we are seeing, if that's what we are looking for, if that's where our eyes are following. And Jesus is trying to warn us, listen, don't do that. You'll get spiritual glaucoma. You'll begin to have a fuzzing of the eyes. And even as a follower of Jesus, all of a sudden light will be bright and you'll run from it and you'll keep looking into darkness. And eventually you won't even know it. Your whole being will be dark because what you kept looking at was dark. He says, don't do that. Don't do that. Put your treasure in the right place. Put your treasure where the light is. Put your treasure in the eternal. The third thing he tells us is not only does our heart will follow, not only will our mind follow, but also, no doubt about it, our allegiance will follow. Our allegiance will follow our treasure. According to George Barna, he's a person who does surveying, polling, and all this kind of stuff. the average person who gives to the church, who gives through the church, the average person giving through the church to kingdom issues. This is not just, oh, I'm tithing to give. This is giving to missions. This is giving to world hunger. This is giving to the poor. But they give through the church. The average person who gives an average of $649 a year. One out of every four people who, when surveyed, said they are born again, which means they basically have the characteristics of somebody who trusts in Jesus, believes that Jesus is the only way to God, they've given their life to Jesus. Approximately one in four people who claim to be born again Christians don't give a dime to anything that's related to the kingdom. Where your treasure is, your heart will be, your allegiance will be. And what happens is Jesus wants us to know that no one can serve two masters. Look at this, verse 24. He says, no one can serve two masters. Now, here's the deal. The word can there in English is kind of an ambivalent word. It's not in the original language. The word in the original language is the word that we actually end up getting our word for dynamite from. It is the word in Acts chapter 1, verse 8, where Jesus, speaking to his disciples, says, you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you. He's not making the statement of, oh, no one can serve two masters. He is saying no one has the power. No one has the ability to serve two masters. Verse 24 again. Either he will love the one and hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. The word for money here is this idea of your wealth, your possessions. If you treasure stuff and things and temporal, Jesus is saying this, listen, you do not have the ability to try to live both for this world and the other world. It's not possible for you and I to live in such a way where we have two masters. We may be able to have two employers, but we cannot have two people that our allegiance is to. And what often, even in my life, I mean confessional up here, even in my life, is I want a God who I can serve wholeheartedly as long as he leaves me comfortable. As long as my life is okay. As long as I have my house and my family's fine and there's no brokenness, as long as my car is what I want and it doesn't break down, I want a God who I will serve as long as he first serves me, as long as he caters to my treasures, my idolatry, my gods. As long as that's kind of the center of what he's about, he'll be the center of what I'm about. But what happens in our lives when those things are taken from us? I think what Jesus is getting at is that here's what will happen. If you try to serve both God and money, if you try to live for both what you have and your treasure here, you're like, all right, I'm going to divide my treasure. I have a treasure in heaven, but I also have a treasure here, and I divide my money, or I divide my treasure, and I live for both. As I do that, eventually something is going to happen in my life where my allegiance is tested. In America, it's happening right now. Maybe the economic downturn is not Obama's fault or Bush's fault or Chrysler's fault or the bank's fault. Maybe it's God's fault. Maybe God is really showing us where our treasures are and that they go away. And in our culture, there's a lot of people who are really, really angry at God. A lot of people in the church, because you can't serve two masters. Either you will love one and hate the other, you will cling to the one and you will despise the other. Jesus is saying you don't have the ability to do it. You cannot. It's not possible. You may float along for a while and live the way I think most American Christians do, which is they're going to try to hold the Jesus with one hand and their stuff with the other. They want to treasure with Jesus, but they also want to treasure the stuff of this life. But there's going to come a point in life where something happens that messes with that treasure. And then what? Then what? Will you have a heart of thanksgiving like Job did, where when he lost it all, and his wife walks in and says, curse God and die. And his response is, I can't. I came into this world naked. I'll go out naked, but I do know this one thing. Blessed is the name of the Lord. I can't curse God and die. He's what I hold to. Or will we be angry with God because he didn't serve our treasure? And ultimately what Jesus is getting at, what is the treasure? Now, there's a lot of outcomes, but what is the eternal treasure? The answer is Jesus. The X for us as followers of Jesus. And the challenge for you, if you're not, if you're here this morning, you're just checking Christianity out, you're like, I'm not sure about this thing. This is what Jesus wants you to understand. He is the greatest treasure. The X is him. It's on him. It's our pursuit of seeing and following Jesus. It's a treasure that treasures and values the glory and the greatness of Jesus more than anything, so our heart follows. It's a treasure that values and looks to and focuses and sees Jesus more than anything. And so now my eyes and my heart is full of light. My mind is full of light. I see truth. It's a treasure of where I treasure Jesus, and he becomes the center of all that I am, and I live for his fame and his greatness. And as I live for his fame and his greatness, even my allegiance, I won't have two masters. I'll live for Jesus. He will be my master. And if he takes everything from me, I will still glory in him. If he tells me to give it all away or some of it away, or he calls me to give to something specific and I know he's doing it, I do it freely. It's a heart that all of a sudden I see people in poverty and I see my blessing and I live in thanksgiving. And Jesus is trying to teach these dudes who are around him, he's trying to teach us this morning this. You become and you pass on what you treasure. Wherever your booty is, all right, you are going to become that, you're going to pass it on. So he's not telling us not to have a treasure. Notice this. He's telling us to make sure that our X, when it marks the spot, is in the right place. So how do we know? And this is the question I dealt with all week. How do you know? We live in a country where we do have stuff. How do we know? And I think it gives us a couple clues, but I'm going to throw out a couple questions here, and then I'm going to close by maybe a path to get there. First of all, where's your heart going? Where's your mind going? Where's your allegiance going? I think that's the first thing. If we can figure out where our heart, our mind, and our allegiance are going, we can be assured they are following our treasure. They are. If your heart is pulled towards stuff and family, and you know, and family is good. You need to, let me pause real quick and make this statement very clear. Nothing that is up here is bad. Family is a great thing. You need to invest in your family and give to them and love them and teach them about Jesus. Having a car is not an evil thing. Just don't make it your God. Don't value it and make it your treasure. The Bible, the rest of the Bible shows us that God made everything good. These are good things. They're just lousy God things. Don't treasure it. And so here's some questions just to ponder about maybe where our treasures lie. First of all, I got to be honest, these are going to be pretty direct. You know, they're confrontational questions that I had to wrestle with too, and I still do. Number one, what have you done in the past day, past week, past month, et cetera, to invest in the kingdom of heaven? Whether with your time, talents, treasures, I mean, do you see visible ways that you're literally doing what Jesus said, where your treasure is being placed in the right place? Second thing, do you define success in life primarily by accomplishments and material goods that are here or by the things that are eternal? I mean, are you more about your own trophy case than things that are beyond this world, your own fame, your own glory? Third thing, what is your dream for yourself? How about your children? You know, think about your kids, if you have kids in here. If they came in here and they said, all right, here's what I want to do with my life. I'm going to go to a place where I can learn to really tell people about Jesus, and then I'm going to go to a place where I may die for my faith. Would you fight them every step of the way? Or would you be grateful that you had the opportunity that your kids have this passion to live for the glory of God? That's a hard question. We're headed to Haiti this week. We'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of service. But boy, when you hop on an airplane, go to someplace that's different and hard, what does that say? Third thing, fourth thing, what would your checkbook ledger and your Outlook scheduler reveal about your treasure? What would that say? Somebody picked up your checkbook or your, you know, your now it's Excel on your computer and got that file or got your Outlook. What would it say about your treasure? Last question. Where are you actively giving to the kingdom? Where are you actively giving to the poor? Where are you active for the advance of world missions? some trying questions. I'll post these on the blog this week, just so you can, if you want to go back and look at them again, you can see them. But here's the bottom line. Jesus said, where your treasure is, your heart follows. You become what you treasure, you pass on what you treasure. Just know it's true. So you're sitting here this morning and go, okay, what do I do? And the first thing is you believe the gospel. You look to Jesus, who is the treasure. You place your trust in him. You follow him. But let me give you two quick paths that the Bible just kind of, I'm going to throw out two verses. There are verses like this all over the Bible. And the first path is this, the path of contentment and thanksgiving. Instead of having a heart that always wants more, we need to put a regulator on our growth of our standard of living and learn contentment and thanksgiving. I was with some buddies one time. You get in a golf cart, it has a regulator. It only lets it go so fast. And I was with a couple buddies who knew how to get into the golf cart and turn it off. It was a fun round of golf. We were flying all over that golf course, but this one guy, you know, he went down this fairway and they were screaming down this hill and he hit the brakes and he spun it three times and both guys went rolling. Meanwhile, I was in the other golf cart laughing my head off because it was funny. I didn't care if they were hurt or not. It was funny to watch. A regulator keeps it from going and going and going and going, and we need to figure out how to get a regulator on the advance of our standard of living. And the way we do that is contentment and thanksgiving. We look at what God has given us and be content and not always pursuing the other guys and be thankful for what God has given. Look at this verse real quick. 1 Timothy 6, 6-8 says, now there's great gain in godliness with contentment. For we brought nothing into the world and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing with these, we will be content. The regulator is contentment and thanksgiving. Are you thankful for what you have? Are you content? If not, begin to seek God and say, God, make me content. Put a regular on my standard of living so that God, if he blesses you more, don't see it as an increase in standard of living. See it as an increase in standard of giving. And that's the second thing. Generous and hilarious giving is the second part of the path. Contentment and a giving, passionate heart that wants to make a difference to the poor, to the kingdom causes, to missions, things like this. Luke chapter 12, verse 33. Sell your possessions, give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in heaven that does not fail, for no thief approaches and no moth destroys. Same kind of words out of Jesus' mouth as he says, the path is to give. And so if you're here this morning, you're like, wow, let's be honest, my treasure's here. What's the path? I think two ways to start working through that is a regulator on your standard of living, contentment and thanksgiving, and begin to find ways to give even if it hurts and it's hard. Figure out how to give to the poor, to missions, world missions, and to kingdom work through Genesis, if that's the way God leads you. Now, I don't want to end by saying, all right, so here's the punchline. We're begging for your money. It's not the issue. The issue is that your heart is going to follow your treasure, not the other way around. Don't pray, God, give me a heart so that I will give. Pray, God, help me put my treasure in the right place so my heart will follow. That's the order. And this morning, my guess is a lot of us need to really think through our treasures. We need to figure out where our X is, repent and believe the gospel, trust Jesus, thank him for forgiveness and beauty in our lives, and begin to reorient our lives so that that changes, all right? So that's my challenge to you. I'm going to pray. We're going to come out and we're going to worship Jesus because he is the treasure. We're going to pass an offering plate. Not because, hey, here it is. We gave a good message. I hope the offering's really big. We're passing the offering plate because this is an act of worship. Giving is an act of worship, and we pass the plate. So if you're a guest, we don't expect you to give or want you to give. This service is our gift to you. But for those who are part of Genesis, this is one of the ways we worship, and we celebrate Jesus as our treasure, all right? And we're going to thank Jesus for all that he's done. So I'm going to pray. You stand, sing with the band, and let's celebrate. Lord, we love you. We praise you. Thank you for being the greatest treasure. Thank you for the reminder that when we live for the stuff that came out of this box this morning, it's short on this earth and it'll leave us, we'll leave it. You are worth it. Every step of the way, you are worth it. We love you today and we praise you. In your name we pray, amen.